Welcome to the Liars Club. This is where we take our guests, we tell them to give us the truth, give us a lie, we figure out which is which. I'm Jessica Wellington.
I'm Felicia Michaels.
And you're about to get lied to.
Today we have such amazing guests with us today. I'm very excited. We have Mr. Johnny Hardwick, and he was a writer and a performer on King of the Hill. Everybody welcome Johnny Hardwick.
Yay! Yeah. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Good.
My nephew's favorite show, by the way.
Oh, cool. Well, what's his name?
Cameron.
Hey, Cameron.
His favorite show.
That was the Dale. Watches. I played Dale. So.
We also have Mike Young here with us today. He is a very funny comedian. He's also a screenwriter. I was looking up the name of your movies. My Man is a Loser.
Yes.
I feel like you would know a lot about that. So that's
tons.
Did that get made?
That got made by Lionsgate, a very, very big company that did not pay me a lot of money, but they bought the movie. It was very nice of them.
Did they change the name of it?
No, I named it that, and it's with Michael Rapaport, John Stamos, and Brian Callen's actually in it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow,
I don't know if you know Callen.
I don't. I mean, this is a high compliment. That is perfect casting for the name of that movie.
It's unbelievable how that fell into place.
Oh, really? Wow.
Thanks.
So thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
We usually start off the show with a theme just to get things shaking. And today's theme was a first kiss. And I'm going to go first because my first kiss was on the day Elvis Presley died.
Wow.
My first boy kiss was on that day. I lived in Fountain, Colorado, which is outside Colorado Springs, in this shitty little like military town. And my mother was German. She was not a war bride, but she was a German lady that my father married when he was stationed over there because he was in the service. And so she had this really weird German lady friend who had a son. But the German lady, her name was like Helga or something like that, was the biggest Elvis Presley freak on the fucking planet. Like when you would walk into their trailer, they lived at on the corner, which was a trailer park. And when you would walk into the trailer, it'd be fucking Elvis everywhere.
Right, commemorative plates out the yizzing.
Oh,
right?
It was craziness. And she had a son who was this kid named Freddie. And so one day we were hanging out and we go and we go like, I feel like such a whore telling this story. We go and we dig a hole in the bushes and we go and we made out. And then we come out of
dig
the
hole in
we
the
dug
bushes.
A hole in the bushes, Jessica. What can I tell you? And then and then we come out and then all the kids were like, did you hear Elvis died? And then we were so guilt-ridden. We were like, I can't believe we dug a hole and made out on the day that Elvis died.
Maybe you caused it.
Yes.
Yeah. Maybe our hot 14-year-old passion gave Elvis a stroke on the toilet. It could have happened. Yeah. So that's my first kiss.
You took all that attention away from the Elvis death.
Yes.
In the neighborhood.
That day.
Nobody was talking about Elvis anymore.
Well, on the good side, because Elvis died, no one remembered that I was the little 14-year-old hoe that dug a
14
hole
in the bushes.
In the bushes.
She's like a rabbit.
And he felt terrible because he went home and his mom was crying in the trailer. Little German tears.
Oh,
I feel like a lot of trailers probably had shrines to Elvis.
Yes. Yes.
You know,
yes,
like in the neighborhood.
Yeah, shrines.
Yeah, I come from the trailer park and I can confirm this.
Yeah.
Right.
And Dale Earnhardt. Shrines.
Yeah.
It's true. My stepdad had that. He had all the commemorative plates and doodads and pictures.
Yeah.
They love their racing.
So tell us about your first kiss.
My first kiss might be the white trashiest of them all.
I believe you have severe competition today after my Elvis story.
Okay. All right. Well, here we go. Mine was with my cousin.
No, you win.
That's fantastic. No better
so you're
short
from
sentence.
Where are you from again? North Carolina, right, okay. All right. That's how those stories usually start.
To be fair, when we we were going out and we made out,
uh-huh.
To be fair, I didn't know he was my cousin at the time.
Oh, okay.
Now, later we found out.
I just wanted to interrupt in my apologies, but you never hear, my first kiss was with my cousin, and then the sentence, to be fair.
Yeah, to be fair, we didn't know. Okay, to be fair, we didn't know. And then my dad told me that he was like my fifth cousin. It didn't really matter. So we ended up sleeping together in high school.
Okay.
Hold on.
That took a whole turn there. The bar is set high for you two today.
We're talking about kisses. Wait a minute.
You didn't know, then you found out, then you slept together?
Yes.
That's double. That's next level. Yeah.
But it's like fifth cousin. My dad said that didn't really count.
Oh, so did you have a conversation like, Dad, I made out and he's my cousin? And
well, my dad was taking us to the movies and he's like, oh, yeah, by the way, you know that's your cousin. And I was like, no, you didn't tell me this. He's like, yeah, it's like your fifth, though. It doesn't really matter.
I feel like his name is Bud.
But did your father know that you had kissed him?
I don't know if he knew we had kissed. I was like 11 or 12 at the time.
Uh-huh.
So he might not have thought we were had kissed.
So how old were you when you guys had sex?
Like 16.
Oh, okay. All right.
We were responsible.
Tight-knit family.
Wow.
That's a tight family.
Okay. Who's next?
Go ahead, Johnny.
My first kiss was with my sister. We were in a closet at school, and we came out, and they told us Kennedy got shot.
Oh, yeah.
Are you serious?
No, he's making fun of both of our stories.
No, but he one-upped everybody in one swift sentence.
Like,
what?
I can't think of anything, but Kennedy got shot is when you were born, right?
Yes, I was born on the day Kennedy got shot.
The day Kennedy was shot.
There you go. You don't remember your first kiss at all?
Let's do some comedy. Okay.
You don't remember your first kiss at all?
Well, let's hear Mike's story, because that was mine.
I actually do.
That was a story.
Yeah.
Okay.
I remember my first kiss. It was with my brother.
Okay.
No. My first kiss, we lived in a little blue-collar neighborhood, like parties in the basement type of stuff. Third grade, I had just come to the neighborhood from like a different
third grade.
I was in third grade. I was a fast moving kid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The whole neighborhood was crazy. I lived on one of those blocks where it's like cul-de-sac to cul-de-sac, 35 kids. Everybody's just doing everything. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So third grade, basement party, my house in the basement. This girl, Amy Adams, not the actor, just a girl in Detroit. Amy Adams, I had like a weird, didn't even know what a crush was, but like it was going on. And I remember we're in the basement and like the music kicked on and we were going to like dance. And she had an older sister. So she already like knew the game and she just put it on me. And like the mouth was open and the tongue came in and I was just like, what the fuck's a tongue?
And you were like 9 years old.
I was 9 years old and I just got drowned out by a thick tongue and a good face. And it was Amy Adams. I kind of freaked out a little bit, but then like, you know, tried to be a smooth athlete and like go with it.
Uh-huh.
It was, but that was my first kiss. I got attacked by Amy Adams.
Wow.
How old was she?
She was my age. Wow. But like she was just advanced. there's just advanced girls out there.
That was an advanced neighborhood. Yeah.
It was a real advanced neighborhood. Wow. Like you had the bushes. We had the same shit going on.
Yeah, but
like
I was 14.
We had flashlight tag and everything was happening in the bushes.
Oh,
it was
really?
Just like, it was just weird. Oh, great neighborhood. I love
it. Wow.
But things happen fast. Amy Adams, shout out.
Yeah, thank you, Amy.
No idea where she is.
Well, here at the Liars Club, we ask our guests to tell two stories. One story, a real story, a true story, and the other story, a complete fucking lie. And then we, Jessica and myself, guess which one is the complete fucking lie. Who would like to go first? Johnny?
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, I just tell two stories?
You're going to tell a story, and then Mike's going to tell his story, and then we're going to rotate it.
Okay. Okay, here's a story. I was, last year, I was out busking on the sidewalk in South Congress Avenue in Austin, and the police came up, and they cuffed me, and they put me in the back of the car, and I said, I'm Dale Gribble from King of the Hill. Pocket sand. Shishasha. And they put me in a psycho ward for 36 hours, and they shackled me down, and they put a white thing over my head, and I escaped once through an elevator at one point when they took me off the shackles to do some kind of body cavity search or something, and then they said they were going to take me on this elevator, and when we went in the elevator, these two fat cops were coming in, and as the doors were closing, I jumped out through the doors, and I went out through the exit and went home, and my wife called the police, and they came and got me and took me back in for another 10 hours. So it's 36 hours total. Okay, that's the first story.
Well, you think about how many rednecks probably have been arrested. I'm like, no, I'm Dale Dribble. You can't, no. Don't put me in.
It doesn't work. I can
tell. Maybe that wasn't your demographic.
Assuming that story's real, that would not work.
Wow.
Okay, that's one story.
Wow, and Mike escaped.
So one time, I'm on the road in the Midwest. I'm on the road doing a comedy show. Fight breaks out in front of me. I drop the mic and try to break up a fight. And in the midst of the fight, I get into the fray because the guy who I was trying to break it up with was still heated, and he just went right at me. We got into it. I caught him with a lucky right hand, and he turned out to be a gangster. And 3 days later, he sent people to find me, and two Mexicans with handlebar mustaches showed up with 9mm and handled it. I didn't get shot, but I got beat up.
Were you at the comedy club comedy condo when they found you? Like,
no, they got me in a restaurant.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
And beat you up?
Yeah, they beat me up.
Damn.
Put me in the hospital.
What restaurant was
it? Comedy's dangerous.
What restaurant?
I'm not saying the name of the restaurant.
This kind of seems plausible because I've seen people, and you've gotten on stage, and some, like, this guy just, he didn't feel you or something. I don't know. You him.
The fight broke out between two other people, two patrons, and I was breaking it up to save the comedy show. And it just went south fast.
And you were on the stage when it broke out.
Yep.
Wow.
You're just going to say that it... Where was it again?
Midwest.
Yeah, he doesn't want to say the club where it was at.
Yeah.
What did the manager say to you? Like, did the ambulance come and get you because you were very injured?
After I hurt the guy, like, we started swinging at each other, and I caught him. And after I caught him, he went down. And then the manager of the place grabbed me. He said, you basically just hit the worst person you could have ever hit. You need to get out of here. And they sent me out the back door, and I went running through the neighborhood. I caught a cab. I went back to the condo, back to where I was staying, and I started getting phone calls like, you really effed up. Like, you fucked up bad.
And from the manager?
From the manager, from a couple local comics that, like, knew who he was.
Oh, shit. Because
they were from there. And they're like, basically, like, yo, you basically just, like, hit Gotti Jr. for this town. And you need to go home. But I couldn't go home because I still had a show to do the next night. So,
that contract.
So you want to talk about like being a like stage fright? That's next level stage fright.
How come you just didn't leave? Why didn't you just say, fuck this club? Burn one bridge.
Because I knew from his reputation that like he was going to find me somehow. Like it just wasn't going to end at me hurting the guy. And I just decided to like continue with business. I'm a dummy from Detroit, so, like, these things have happened. I really wasn't believing how, like, real deal he was. And then when the guy showed up with the guns.
Have you since been back to that club?
No, never.
And did you, were the police called?
They were. I was getting, like, regular visits from, like organized crime division. I mean, I never talked about it to them. They would visit me randomly and just, like, try to bang the door down and be like, you're going to tell us what's going on. Because they always, you know, cops and gangsters they work in the same area, gray area. And they all know each other. So they were, I didn't know if they were with him or if they were like really trying to get him. But they basically tried to like get me to talk and I just wouldn't talk.
And
so
I never talked.
I said I got mugged.
Oh, really?
Because I looked crazy. Like they blew my face out. Like my, you know, I looked like the Elephant Man. And so.
This is the Mexicans that got you.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I didn't ask where they were from, but like, they were giant dudes with handlebar mustaches, and they were either straight up like extras from a great movie, or they were, you know, that's what they were. But you know, I don't wanna. I love the Mexican people. Other than that night,
just not sent by a gangster.
It was crazy. It was the craziest.
Wow.
Yeah, it was heavy.
And so, how long were you in the hospital?
I was in the hospital just for like a full day because they basically like when they saw me, they rushed me in because they thought I had a brain injury. So they put me in a CAT scan, checked me out. No bleeding on the brain. 27 stitches, broken nose. I mean, they got me bad.
What if this vertigo?
It could literally be a result. I could have things breaking off in my brain still. You know, you never know.
How long ago was this?
This was like a few years back, six, seven years.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that is an interesting story. That makes me...
nervous.
No, it doesn't make me nervous. Oh, okay. But there's so many questions I have, like, you know, did the club owner pay for your hospital bill?
He offered to pay for my hospital bills, and I let him pay for the hospital bills. It was like $4,200. I remember the bill. It was like $4,200. And the crazy thing that ended up happening was, being from Detroit, I know people that are bad people, just like every, you know, listen, when you're a comedian, you're on the road. That's the beauty of being a comedian. Bad people like you, good people like you. Like, I go on this road with Bob Saget, seven guys from like a biker gang who he's like, who loves Saget show up. So you just know you, like, it sounds ridiculous, but that's the beauty of comedy. So long story.
Work in the safe rooms now, are
you? You know what I mean? Bob only
tried. Well, I don't work with Saget anymore.
Yeah. Bob, by the way, your show, believe me, you got a lot of people that would love, that got your back, that are from interesting underworlds.
Just none of them policemen in Austin, Texas.
So, yeah, so I was like, so the cops found out about it. They kept trying to press me, and they would visit me all the time. And one time they actually came to me, and I was like, I said, I got mugged. And they're like, you got mugged? And they pulled out a digital photo of me from the hospital. And they're like, this is what happens to you when you get mugged. And I just stuck to my story of the mugging. And eventually it went away. But it was a
crazy
story.
As they were
story.
Beating you up, did they say, don't breathe a word? You better
no,
not.
No, like, they didn't say anything like that. They said, the
I think
dude,
that,
one
that
dude.
That message was kind of implied.
The one dude put. There was two dudes with the guns. Uh-huh. One dude had kind of had the gun just on me straight ahead and put me in a booth. And then the other dude just kind of was over here, kind of just aiming at me. So I just knew I couldn't. And it's, you know, you have crazy superhero thoughts when shit like this is going down. Because in my mind, I'm like, I definitely don't want to tell my, you know, my family cannot hear that this is how it ends. Like, this is a bad way to end. So I'm thinking, like, if I swoop the gun, I get hit. It was crazy what was going through my mind. Long story short, they put me in the booth, and the dude that I had beat up, he came around, and he was like, I remember he was like wearing like a workout outfit, like a gym tight
like
gym
what
shirt.
What you're wearing right now?
Kind of like this, but tight, like turtleneck. And came around to this side, and they locked me in the booth with a, you know, they put the table on me, and they went to work, and they just went to work on me. And it was just
when
crazy.
I was mugged and robbed when I was 17 in front of Winn-Dixie, and they pulled a gun on me, I froze.
Yeah.
They were like, get in the car, and all I could do was shake my head no.
Yeah. Fight or flight's a real thing.
And that was it. Like, I just froze. I couldn't do anything.
Wow.
So even if they wanted me, like, if they, I get, they wanted me to get in the car, but if they really wanted me, they were going to have to, like, shove me in. Because I just, I wasn't moving.
Right. How scary.
It's scary.
Scary.
But it's, but what's interesting is I ended up reading, you ever read the book I Killed about all the comedians on the road?
Right.
So when you read that book about like Tim Allen and Seinfeld and all these guys on the road, you just realize that like your percentages of things happening as a comedian are way increased because you're just a lone wolf on the road.
Right.
So like Tim Allen had some shit go down, and like there was a story where like Seinfeld offended like a mobster in Jersey, and he had to go to a sit down and like apologize. And so, you know what I mean? But like you really see what it is, and like, there's stories out there, and I'm not, you know, mine's drastic for sure. It's very drastic.
Wow.
But, you know, being a comedian's dangerous.
I was recently on the road, and I may have accidentally joined a white supremacy group.
Accidentally.
It was an accident.
Shit, they were like, you are our leader.
Wait a minute, did you kiss your cousin? Yes, I did.
Right. You're in. Wow. All right.
So that was heavy.
That's a
story.
That's a.
If it's true, it's a story.
I know. If that's true, I'm very sorry. If that's not true, you're a fucking genius.
Because
that's a good story. Wow.
All right.
Wow.
Yeah. And your holes, you've plugged your holes up. So.
Yeah. Wow. That's a lot.
Holes in my face or my story?
No, the only thing is that I think it might be a lie is when you said the club owner paid your hospital bill, because that sounds like bullshit.
Yeah, that does sound like bullshit. Yeah, that's true.
He did.
Yeah, okay. All right.
Felt bad.
I had a club owner. I was just telling Johnny this the other day in Houston, Texas. I think that club was called the Laugh Stop, and there was a woman, and this is like 25, something years ago, and she owned the club. And when I did the first night, and my mother passed away, and they came and told me, and the club owner, and in those days you would go like Wednesdays through Sunday, so on Thursday she came and she told me, because they called at the clubs before cell phones, and then she gave me my whole week's worth of pay and helped me make a ticket to go home.
Wow.
And yeah, that was the kindest thing, one of the kindest things ever done for me by a club owner. Yeah. So, I mean, I do kind of believe it, but maybe not either.
I remember that club. I played that club.
Yeah, that was...
There was a guy running it when I did it, though. I forgot his... He's like a big cowboy, like real deal cowboy.
Huh.
It was after probably the whoever you're talking
about.
Yeah,
but he
was like,
yeah. I'm so sorry.
That's what kills me, is like, that's the kind of people I would see you pissing off. You know what I mean? Like, you...
A big cowboy?
Yeah.
Why?
Because you're like this...
I like people.
Michigan guy, Detroit, you're going to come in and you're going to smooth talk, and they're like, who's a smooth talk?
Yeah, I'm from Texas, and I'm already a little pissed. And I don't know.
Hey.
And I like you, but I don't know what it is.
And I know you got friends with guns, too.
Yeah.
That club owner took us out. I remember we were there with like Rogan or somebody, and the club owner at the time was real cowboy, and like I didn't know you could like just carry guns, like
yeah.
You could have guns, and I'm like, man, we're driving fast. This is, and then we took us in downtown Houston. I'm like, this place is crazy. He's like, we don't have to worry, and like put his gun on the dashboard. I was like, dude's fucking nuts.
Yeah.
Some real country shit.
Yeah.
Well, it is true about being a comedian that you do run across people that weird shit ensues. Like one time back in the day, I was working in Boston, and they used to hire, I think it was at Nick's Comedy Club, this is like in the late 80s, and they used to hire off-duty policemen to come be the bouncers at the club, right? Because Boston could be a pretty rowdy crowd. And so one night after my show, the policeman and a friend of his, but they were like the door guys there, they took me in the police car, and we just drove around, and then they break out coke, and they're fucking doing coke and all this stuff. I was like, holy shit, this is some crazy shit, you know? In the police car, anyway.
In the police car.
And the weird shit is, they think that they're being cool, and they think that you're going to think that they're cool. You know what I mean? But you're probably thinking, like, this is who's protecting us? Like, these idiots?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a weird dynamic.
All right, now it's time for your second story.
Oh, well, I'm going to make this one shorter, okay? I was doing a set at the Velveeta Room in Austin, Texas, late at night, and I got really drunk. This is before I stopped drinking. I'm drinking a while. And one of the young female comics came up on stage and shaved my balls on stage.
Interesting.
In front of everybody.
Was it just something that was unsaid between the two of you? Like, did you invite her up to shave your balls, or she just stormed the stage and
just
got to
shaving? Came up, and just one thing led to another, I guess.
How do you one thing lead to another, and oh, by the way, I have a razor. Let's get those balls trimmed.
Well, you know, you've been thinking about it all day, about needing your balls trimmed, and then...
How did she know that your balls needed to be trimmed?
Well, because people in the audience were telling her. Because
people in the audience...
People in the audience were telling her that...
That you need your balls
part
trimmed.
Of the act.
Trim his balls.
I have many questions about this, Johnny. Many questions.
Things happen.
It's gonna. I'm gonna bail it. It's falling apart because I'm telling Doug Stanhope's story. Right now. Sorry.
I think I saw that. I think I was there that night. Was that in Phoenix?
It happened.
Wasn't it
right?
Austin?
It was in Austin.
Stanhope.
Sorry.
So a girl shaved
Doug
Stanhope's.
It's hard for me to lie. See, I can't. I'm sorry.
Look, if you're gonna steal a ball,
well, now you know what the real
story
is, though.
From Doug Stanhope. Well, let's get to Mike's.
Let's do Mike's thing,
and we'll get
I can't believe this other story is not real. So let's see what he's got.
Yeah.
So this is even crazy. This is almost just as crazy. But when I was 14, I grew up in a neighborhood that was fully diverse: Black, Arab, couple Jews, and like some everything, like punk rock. We just, everything was in our neighborhood, and my dad went into some shady stuff for a while, and he was selling guns, just, you know, he would buy them out of Walmart, whatever, and he would sell them kind of on the black market. You know what I mean? He'd buy a lot of them from the place, and he sold them to like some unscrupulous characters that would come around. So the FBI, local FBI for real, like in Detroit, kind of got word that my dad was like the guy. And so they took my dad to, they wanted to sit him down and talk to him and see who he was selling to, see if he would cooperate, because he knew a lot of people. Detroit's a super small town. And so they told my dad they want to meet him at this diner in Detroit. And so I was 14 years old. He took me with him. I didn't know we were going to meet the FBI. I thought I was just going to lunch with my dad. So we go and we sit and we sit down at the diner, and this guy's sitting across from him, like straight buttoned up, and he's asking my dad all these questions. And he's asking him about like guys in our neighborhood. And he's like, I know you, you know, tell me about Demetrius. And I know you sold, you know, something, to, you know, guns to Demetrius and this and that. And my dad literally was the kind of guy who like really didn't ask like the names of everybody that was giving him money. He didn't care. He was just getting the money. And I knew the names of everybody. And so I just, cause it was my, it was our neighborhood. I knew the young, you know, these dudes were like 17, 18. I was 14. My dad was a grown man. He was 40. And so I started answering most of the questions for like to the FBI guy. And before we left, the FBI guy is like, yo, we should just flip the kid. Like we should just literally, he's like, I'll give you to me. He's like, I'll give you $150 cash every week. And he's saying like, you know, if it's okay with you, to my dad, you know, I'll give your kid $150 cash. And my, and we were kind of poor, and $150 cash was like kind of good money for me for sure. My dad was definitely going to take a cut. And and before you knew it, I was meeting like every other week with like an FBI dude at 14 years old, and I was giving him information.
So you're not a stranger to the FBI?
No, not at all.
I mean, if
I mean, way, I haven't been in touch with the FBI forever, and they cut me off when I was, by the time I was 16, we had no more contact. But, you know, there was a, and they actually, believe it, they actually had me do a couple like marijuana buys, you know, like when I was 15, by the time I hit 15, they were giving me like real money and like go buy some weed from your boy, you know, Rick down the street. They called it, they called him Maserati Rick, like you could, like in Detroit, because he always had a, he had a Maserati. He was a drug dealer, and so
yeah, if that doesn't next stand thing, out in, bullshit. In Detroit, Michigan, the Detroit's Maserati. Real.
So anyway, long that's the story. I was doing some, I was working both sides as a young teenager.
It sounds good.
This is
mic up to your mouth.
Sounds good.
Interesting.
You don't want to miss that.
Interesting. Interesting. Wow.
Yeah.
What do you think, Jessica?
Well, Mike.
If that's your real name.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I have a feeling that the Mike, the you beating the guy up or hitting the guy, and then you in turn getting beat up is true. For some reason, I don't believe the Detroit, your dad selling guns from Walmart is true.
But why? Why don't you believe that story?
Because Maserati Mike, or what, it, Rick.
I believe the, because listen,
Google him right now.
I'm very,
Maserati Mike, it would have been believable.
Well, here's the thing. People that own Maseratis are a weird group of people, because I just sold my house, and right across the street was a house where a guy didn't have a roof on his house, literally for the 7 years that I lived there, and he drove a Maserati. He had no fucking roof, but he drove a Maserati. So I am going to say that your story with your dad is true, because there's no way a club owner would pay a $4,200 hospital fee.
Well, he didn't pay
I love
it.
That that's what you're
offered.
Sticking to, that
yeah,
part of the
yeah.
story.
Offered. He didn't take it.
So is this the part of the...
Did you take
we,
the...
Is
did
this
you,
the part where we tell the truth?
Or? Well, hold on. Did the club owner didn't pay the $4,200, or he just offered?
No, he paid.
He paid.
Oh, you yeah, said, then, wait a minute. In your story before, you said that he offered and
paid.
That you didn't do it, that you
yes,
didn't take
Andrew?
It.
Yes, Andrew?
I will be the medium of this. He said that offered, and he goes, and then I took him up on it. Oh.
Yeah, okay.
All right. That's Andrew, our producer.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. So I say your first one is a lie, and the second story is true.
Okay, so now I get to tell.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah,
the
yeah.
first one is true. The, the second one's a lie.
Oh, the second you one. You fucked me on Maserati Rick.
No.
You got fucked by Maserati.
The part about your dad buying guns from Walmart's got to be true, right?
No, no, okay. None of that is my life at all. I took that.
Because that sounds like a good deal.
It
I
is
was
a
thinking,
Detroit
wait a
story,
minute.
And uh-huh. believe it or yeah. not, it's actually about a guy named Richard Wershey. And in September, there's a movie coming out called White Boy Rick, and uh-huh. it's starring Matthew McConaughey is playing his dad. But I've been brought on to write the book about White Boy Rick,
really?
So he's actually still in prison. Uh-huh. And the rest of the story is that he was given a life sentence, and he was given a life sentence on a nonviolent drug offense. And yeah, I mean it's a famous story actually. Like that McConaughey's doing it, the movie's public knowledge, whatever. But like the actual White Boy Rick, that was I put myself in his place. That's his story.
Wow.
So
yeah.
I'm doing
Mike
the book
Young.
On him.
Congratulations cool. and well played. You had us going on that one.
I had you going for
you
sure.
You had me going on
you
that
did. Well,
one.
And also in the first story, you said that his neighborhood was like cul-de-sac with a bunch of basements. And I never imagined, I don't know why this is, but I don't imagine a very diverse neighborhood having basements.
I don't know why that is. I don't know why you feel that way either.
That's all right.
This
well, there
is
you go.
In a neighborhood where they have rockers and punk rockers.
Right.
I noticed you said that.
Yeah.
You said very diverse, rockers and punk rockers.
Because we actually had like
whoa, damn. Well, we had like living together, side by side.
Those rockers
Southfield,
and punk
Michigan,
rockers.
Man. It was our little king of the hill.
There you go. There you go. Well, da-boom. Obviously, because Johnny gave up that the second one was a lie.
Yeah, I think we're both going to get this one right.
But
I was getting. That did happen to Doug Stanhope, though.
Yeah,
that's a famous Bell Biv story.
But you guys have done two absolute different things than all the other people that have come on and done the podcast.
It's
you
true.
Actually told a story from something that you're working on, and you told a story that happened to another comedian, and someone hasn't done that
yeah,
yet.
Nobody's yeah, nobody's ever done that yet.
Yeah. Not even Ellen Kerrigan's abortion
feeling someone's
abortion
gonna
story.
Tell one about me now.
Well, wow. Wow. That's. I'm sorry to hear that happen to you.
Oh, I am too. Yes, yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
But it is a hilarious
they were,
story.
Yeah. Well, the part when they pulled me out by my feet out of the squad car and my head hit the concrete. I don't know what. That was way over the line. And from there on, I was just terrified of the whole thing. So
yeah.
I just didn't even really know what they were doing to me or anything while
right,
I was going
right.
on. But I still kind of kept my way. They shot me up with something and I was just like, I was like this or something, and I was like real hyper aware of what was going on around me for a while, like I was tripping.
That's the scariest shit.
Crazy.
That's the scariest shit.
I was nuts.
About the police. Like yeah. they can just have you do what they want. I
yeah.
hate that.
Well, they had
like,
been.
That story is just.
There
me,
were
like,
rumors
as
that they
story.
Had been disappearing all these homeless people too. You know, and so and well, I mean, the whole story was that the. This guy at the San Jose Hotel, they had hired this guy to be the security guard at the parking lot, and he had called into the cops and said there was some guy on drugs that was acting up or something like that, and they came in and saw me and got me, and I was sitting there with my dog and my guitar, and I'd just gotten a coffee from Joe's and sat down on the
what happened to your
side
dog?
Of the street, kind of. A friend of mine had the dog. And the cops were like, we can take the dog to the pound or leave him with somebody. And someone took the dog, and they had me cuffed behind my back and threw me in the back of the car. It was like 100 degrees, and they shut the door of that car, and they were talking to people outside for like 20 minutes, and the car was getting hotter and hotter. And I was just like, jeez, I couldn't even breathe.
Wow.
Did it change
but they
your...
They took me downtown. They didn't take me to lockup. They took me downtown.
Microphone.
They took me downtown. They went down... Are we still doing the show?
Yes.
But they took me into some weird underground place and yanked me out of the car, and my head busted open. And from then on, I was just really, really disenchanted, disenfranchised, whatever you want to.
Does
I was
it
terrorized
think
a lawsuit
by
right
the
away?
Cops.
Yeah,
I was
absolutely.
Completely terrorized. I did think they were going to kill me.
Really?
And they kept me so long, I just didn't know what was going on. And then they finally just let me go. I think somebody had finally convinced them that I wasn't a vagrant, you know.
Did it change your point of view of, like, what happens to people all over the place, like African-Americans? Or did it change your point of view of, like, wow, the cops, really? Was there any?
Yeah, I think it did. It does change your view when it happens to you, even though I was hyper aware of what was going on with shooting black people and stuff like that that the cops were doing and all this stuff. But that just it was just crazy.
Wow.
And it's more like they're on some kind of power trip than anything else, and they're going by this set of rules. So if I'm telling them this guy, Dale Grohl from King of Hill, well, then they're going to, that the rule book says lock up in psycho ward, right?
Right.
I mean, there's no other thing, choice for that, because it can't be that, right? So it was just crazy. And from then on, I was just in this kind of surreal world of knowing that I was telling the truth, surrounded by these people that think I'm lying and are screaming at me and torturing me.
Did you kind of like this? You kind of feel like your character from King of the Hill, like for real this time? Because he's kind of like conspiracy theorist.
Exactly, it was an episode that he would have done. Yeah, exactly.
Because nobody ever believes in him. He's always like,
right,
the cops are coming, UFOs, whatever. And he's a conspiracy theorist.
Well, let me ask you this.
Well,
that's
the memes are now all over the internet that Dale was right. You know? So it was like, so I was just going, yep.
That's crazy.
Figures. It was really weird, though. It was very bizarre. No one believed me. My agent didn't believe me. No one believed me that it happened. My wife, nobody. But it happened.
Well, that's what I was going to ask Mike. When that happened to you, because you kept it quiet, did anyone believe you at all? Or?
I mean, they believed me because I had the face to prove it. I mean, I was stitched up bad.
But did they think you started it? Because I know as comedians, when you say, this happened to me, everyone's like, what did you do?
A few people, and it did piss me off, actually, because I was in that, like, I did have, like, that moment with the guy, and there was, like, the moment that I probably could have just walked away. And by the way, I probably shouldn't have been involved because I was just the entertainment. But I was trying to save the place in my mind. I was like, I'm going to calm this down and we're going to get back to work. But it was a guy who was, like, already seething mad. And there was, like, this moment where I could have maybe walked away. But the thought that I had, I remember clear as day, he had, like, veins, like, coming out of his neck. And he was, like, this close. He was so close to my face. And he had just beat up somebody else, basically. And in my mind, I was like, this guy's going to bite my face off if I don't swing first.
Mm-hmm.
So my dumb ass, I swung first.
Oh, so you swing first.
I swung first. We were at each other. I caught him. And I hurt him. Like, he got hurt, you know. Like, he was hurt, even though there was no mark on him. But, like, his eardrum was messed up. And, you know, it turned out that I hurt him from that. But there was the moment. And that couple friends bummed me out because they were like, you never should have punched him. But, like, until you're in a situation where you feel fully threatened, you don't know how you're going to act. And I'm from a family, you know, we're scrappy, you know. It's like, if you're about to get beat up, you got to go.
Were you worried after the fact, because you're a little bit of a ladies' man? Okay. And were you worried about your face?
Not at all. I was just, by the way, one of my friends had this, like stuntman cream. And somehow it's like I swear to God, I'm not even
that
kidding.
That sounds like a sex cream, stuntman cream.
It's like my boy's like, yo, bro, take this stuntman cream. It's supposed to be like, it's like everybody felt bad for me, and one of my friends gave me. I swear to God, this shit was like a gel or whatever, and it was like the fastest. I was like, every day was like from here. It was like, it was like a miracle cream. So I healed up. There's a ton of crazy middle shit that I didn't get into. Like, when he did that to me, my cousins and my family in Detroit who don't fuck around like that, they're like, we're coming. And now they're going to go to that place. And, like, all of a sudden, I was, like, in the middle of what was about to be a very bad situation for everybody. It was like my dad's best friend is a connected guy in Detroit. And I sat down, and it was, like 3 70-year-old men. Jew, Italian, Albanian, literally. And my godfather is just like, here's the deal. You know, if you feel fine and this is over and it's done with, it's over. It's 100% over. This guy had to save face. He's a real guy. That's how it goes. He goes, but if you think this isn't over and you think this is going to continue and you're nervous and scared everywhere, then we're going to make a call. And it was like that. And it was like, so I was just like, yo, I am a comedian. I just want to get back to LA to the Comedy Store, do my jokes. I don't want to have that on me. You know what I mean? But it was like that. It was like that. And you'd be shocked at how cheap it is. Like, life ain't shit, like, to some people.
Well, it's not the first time that I've said it. When you ask people to tell you a lie along with telling you the truth, you really learn more about someone than just having a normal conversation. Do you have anything you want to shout out? Or
God, what do I want to... I have a new movie on Netflix that I wrote and directed called A Stand-Up Guy. The more people that watch it, it's always better for me.
Who's in that?
Danny Abacazar is the lead. Ethan Suplee is in it. Michael Rapaport's in that one also.
Oh, awesome.
Saget does a cameo in it. It was fun. Fun little indie comedy.
Oh, I'll go and watch it.
Yeah,
for sure.
We'll watch it for sure.
So that's on there. And then my podcast is called Stories That Need to Be Told.
Oh, very
Some
nice.
Stories need to be told.
And how about you?
Well, I was out here pitching my animated spaghetti western rock and roll television series Trailer Metal.
Uh-huh.
And I'm gonna go back and write the pilot for that. It looks like that's the next step, but I've been working on that with some friends and we're pitching that, and I got everybody from King of the Hill to do voices in it. So
if we don't
do a King of the Hill reboot, this is one way to reboot it, if we can get Trailer Metal going. But it's right. Cool, it's like set 10 years in the future, and it's in
They elect
the president on a yearly talent show, and the new one starts World War III, and that kicks off the show.
Wow.
Trailer Metal. About a rock and roll band that travels through occupied America. So,
and where can people follow you? I know you like to be on Instagram.
Oh, I'm still trying to figure Instagram out.
Yeah, okay.
Don't follow me there yet.
Okay.
I'm on Facebook or wherever.
I'm actually trying. I'm trying Instagram, too. I'm with you. Yeah. I'm the worst.
Are you not a visual person?
I am on there, but I'm at the real Mike Young, but I'm just not great with any of this. It's like I got to hire my nephew or something to do this.
You don't walk around and take pictures of flowers.
I do more Facebook Live. I'll walk around Facebook Live.
Oh, nice.
But like, I don't even know what's the cool thing on Instagram that you're supposed to do. Like, I thought I
you
knew.
Just do whatever.
The real Mike Young.
Yeah, because I saw Mike Judge's is the real Mike Judge, but... What's to keep some guy from just putting the real in front of some name and pretending to
be... Well, when you have a common
name... they're not real.
I couldn't get my name. Mike Young or...
I think Jeff Ross has one. Ron Jeremy, because he gets... People just do accounts for him.
Yeah.
You have to put something in front of it to, like, make it different. Because they've already... Like, that your name has already been taken.
Yes.
So a lot of people will just say...
Yeah, I understood that. But I was going, this could still be fake. Somebody could have just called themselves the
right,
real so-and-so.
Right,
it's
right.
True.
It's well, thank funny. You guys. Thank you for joining us very much.
Thank you.
I hope everyone has a great week. And for all you guys out there, thank you for joining us once again. I'm Felicia Michaels.
And I'm Jessica Wellington.
And you've been listening to The Liars Club.
And you've been lied to.
Hello, ladies and gentle sirs. This is Andrew Rose, the producer of The Liars Club. I just wanted you lovely folks to follow our awesome hosts. And that would be Jessica Wellington and Felicia Michaels. And you can follow them on Twitter at Felicia Michaels, F-E-L-I-C-I-A, and Jess Wellington, 2. That is the number 2. Yeah.
All right, here at the Liars Club, of course, Felicia and I do all the work, but we couldn't put it together if it wasn't for the lovely producer and comedian Andrew Rose. Thank you to him, and please follow him on Twitter at 1AndrewRose. That's the number 1 Andrew Rose on Twitter.
Thanks, guys, for coming by and sharing your stories with us here at the Liars Club.
And you've been lied to.